Okay, so my name is Brayden Clark, and I'm here talking with my grandpa, who is?
My name's William Bricker. I'm going on 72 years old. I was born February 22nd, 1947.
And the date is November 25th. So. All right, so to get it started, just tell me a little bit about your childhood.
I was the oldest of four children. I have two brothers and a sister. I was named after my mother's brother, who was killed in World War II aboard the USS Rowan, a destroyer that was sunk over in Salerno, Italy during World War II by a German PT boat. Because of that, probably I grew up with a pretty close relationship with my mother's parents, because they had lost a son who I was named after.
Yeah. So, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Brackenridge. At that time, it wasn't too bad of an area, but that section of the city is pretty run down right now. There had been a history with my grandparents and great-grandparents. They had owned a hotel. The hotel actually came on my grandmother's side and was called the Kepler Hotel, and that was my grandmother's maiden name, Kepler. Both of my mother's parents grew up in Butler, and then eventually, when the Hotel Kepler was bought, my grandmother moved to this area with her mother. Her father had died at a very early age, and my great-grandmother was a single mother for much of the childhood of my grandmother, running the hotel.
Growing up, tell us a little bit about your brothers and sisters. Were they annoying, or did you enjoy your childhood? Being the oldest one, and then being younger.
I think through much of it, I enjoyed having siblings. I still enjoy working with children. That's why I still coach in baseball at 72. I've enjoyed my grandchildren.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Crazy.
But
though.
Growing up, because there was approximately 4 years between each of them, there's a pretty wide divulgence of ages. My brother Bob and I did do some things together, but again, because he was 4 years younger, he would have been one of those annoying younger brothers that most older siblings tolerate.
So what was the age gap between you and your siblings?
Four between each one.
Oh, really?
Four between Bob, four between Bob and Bonnie, and four between Bonnie and BJ.
Huh. What were some of your favorite hobbies growing up? Hunting has to be one.
Hunting and fishing have been really the two mainstays. I enjoy nature.
Yeah.
I tried to instill some of that in both my kids and my grandkids.
And you did.
And I was fortunate, too. At that time, my dad was a machinist at Alcoa, working shift work in my early childhood. And there was a neighbor who became very close to us. And between he and my dad, they pretty much assured that I got out to the woods or to the streams, depending on the particular season. And I learned much of what I know about the woods really from a neighbor, by the neighbor Fred Strom. And we hunted together up until his death.
Really? Was there anybody else you hunted with? Did you hunt with your brothers?
I hunted with, both brothers at different times. Normally, when I hunted with Bob, it was really a competition. But you tried to take, particularly in some instances, the same time that I was fortunate to get with either my dad or the neighbor, and give them some of the same opportunities that I had with regard to hunting and fishing.
Who do you believe was the best hunter in your family?
Best hunter?
Yes.
I'd have to say, to be honest, me.
That's what I thought.
Now, my brother Bob's a good archer.
Yeah.
But he hunts...
private property.
Private property, and that makes a considerable difference.
Yeah.
BJ was always a little bit hot-headed.
Not patient.
You really had to cajole him on the stream. I do remember him once when we were fishing on Patterson Run for brook trout. Oh, we had, and my wife, who was fishing with us at the time, had a pretty good day. He got so frustrated that he threw one of my fly rods to the middle of the creek.
And you didn't get it back?
Yeah,
oh,
I went ahead and got it, yeah.
What age did you start hunting and fishing? Like a young age?
Oh, yeah. Fishing, I started probably at about 7.
Yeah.
That's when my grandparents bought a cottage at a little lake called Canadota.
Oh, yeah.
And the neighbor that I hunted and fished with happened to be a pretty avid fly fisherman who tied his own flies. And he sort of steered me to fly fishing. In fact, he gave me my first fly rod reel and my first pair of hip boots. His son had outgrown them. And
what was his name? Was it Red?
No, George Strom. George was... Fred Strom.
Bro?
Fred Strom was the neighbor.
Ah.
And I learned to fly fish just by trial and error, catching bluegills. And at that time, there was a neighbor up at the cottage who liked bluegills to eat.
Yeah.
And I would catch bluegills by the bucket load and give them to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I developed a very strong like of trout fishing. And fortunately, the outlet of the lake is the headwaters, or one of the headwaters, of Oil Creek, the West Branch of Oil Creek. And I spent much of my summers, probably from 7 to, 14 or 15, fishing most weekends up there with my grandparents. My grandparents would drop me off in the morning at one of the streams, and then pick me up in the evening.
How old were you when they did that?
I fished...
You were pretty young, right?
Yeah, I probably fished some of those areas from about the age of 10 to up to the point where I could drive. And like I said, my grandparents were pretty good. It wasn't that they were just dropping me off. We'd go as far as maybe 20 miles away. My grandfather would drop me off and then come and pick me up. Like I said, I was somewhat spoiled by them.
So, to get back to your life overall, like life in general, were you a good student in high school?
Actually, in high school, yeah, I was, I wouldn't say a good student. I could have been a good student, but I developed some bad habits. I was an excellent student through elementary school and junior high. But in high school, I sort of developed friendships with some characters that were somewhat suspect.
Like who?
Oh, geez. I don't want to name names, and okay, I don't want to make them feel guilty. But let's say they were not the most outstanding students.
Did you have some fun?
Yeah. And I developed a couple close relationships there. Unfortunately, three of my best friends are already dead.
Jeez.
And what you find out, and in many instances, the friendships that you have up through high school change considerably.
Yeah.
Once you reach adulthood, and particularly if you get married and start a family, there's...
Did you maintain your friendships from high school?
Not too much after I got married, because then you developed another group of people.
Yeah.
But we were, I'd have to say, pretty much devoted to the kids. When we had children, we tried to make the children a part of just about everything.
Yeah.
So vacations and all that, it was always with the kids and trying to do something that they would enjoy. Spent a lot of time at the seashore. I could be a seashore bum, but I do like Pennsylvania and the seasons, particularly because of the hunting and fishing.
Where did you and your family like to go most on vacation? Nag's Head or somewhere in North Carolina?
Well, we started out the first trip to the oceans actually were way back when I was real young, and they'd go to Atlantic City.
Where's that?
In New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
That's where they have the old boardwalk. I don't remember too much about that because we were pretty young at the time. And the real recollections of that were when I can remember riding in elevators, and we were really amused by the elevators in the hotels that we stayed at Atlantic City. It was really something considerably different than what you were exposed to before then.
Yeah.
Then later on, Virginia Beach, Nag's Head.
What was your favorite vacation spot? Mine's definitely the Outer Banks in North Carolina.
Yeah, I'd have to say the Outer Banks. Buxton, at that time, was not real commercial, and because we like to do more outdoor things, it suited us a little better. That's where I learned to clam, learned to surf fish, got exposed to some of the bigger fish that are there by chance. Probably did some dumb things too at different times. We actually went across an inland river or tidal river on rubber rafts with the kids on our backs. We later found out that they had several drownings at that particular area every year because of people getting taken out to the ocean by the current.
But
we collected sand dollars on that vacation, and we still decorate with some of the remaining sand dollars.
Yeah, you put those on your Christmas tree.
Yeah. We learned, that was also on a later vacation down in that area where we would find whelk.
What's
and
that?
Bring those home. And
what's
that's
whelk?
What whelk are what you guys would have seen or you saw at Chincoteague.
Oh, all the bunches of things on the ground?
This is 6th Avenue that you were at. This is the Kepler Hotel.
Really?
Yeah. And this was my grandparents' home.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a pretty nice house. It's pretty big.
Yeah, there was three floors, and that's where your grandmother and I, And our apartment was this one on this side the whole way back.
Wow, that's cool.
When I told you about, you learned to be a good center field hitter, I'll show you why.
She can only hit straight.
We played, this was, home plate was right off of the yard there.
Yeah.
And you were hitting up there. This was a garden at the time, and there was a garden to the other side.
Jeez.
So you either became a good center field hitter or you lost your ball.
What were you going to say about Grandma? Something about the Capitol Hotel? Is that where you and her met?
No. I met your grandmother in high school.
Really?
Yeah, we started dating our junior year of high school.
Jeez.
And she was always a sort of a pain. We'd date up until summertime and then break up.
But how long did that go on?
Well, we dated through my college education.
You didn't go to the same college though, did you?
No. Grandma went to nursing school. She was a registered nurse. She had gone to Shadyside Nursing Hospital.
You went
to? That's where she got her RN. I went to Penn State.
Yeah.
And that's where I found out that it would have been a lot better had I kept some of the better students as friends.
Jeez.
Because you got your eyes opened when you went. Yeah, when we go by there, I remember some of the things. My brother and I and some of my friends went to the movies just about every Saturday. At that time, though, I think the movie was like a quarter, and the first 200 kids got free popcorn when you went in. But and there were three theaters in Trenum, actually, at that time. The Manis, the Harris, and I don't remember what the other one was called. But we were pretty regular visitors there. It was a good, I think my parents felt that it was a good way to keep us out of their hair for a good period of time.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the movies you watched back then?
Oh, jeez.
Are there any that I would know?
Probably you wouldn't. I guess by name you would. You wouldn't realize there was a whole series of Tarzan movies that were on. Westerns were big with John Wayne. His movie career had begun at that time, mm-hmm. or was well into his movie career. Any of the movies about World War II, I had always been interested in firearms, and that was another typical movie theme that would go to monster pictures, horror films.
Yeah,
all the horror films like the Draculas, and then there at that time you had in the black and white era, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, and then meet either Dracula, Frankenstein. There were a couple comics. There was a series of a group about young kids called the Little Rascals would go to see their movies pretty frequently.
I think I've heard of them, but I don't know who that is. Oh!
He almost got him.
He did.
He did.
Dang. Okay. What did you study in college?
I began in metallurgy and stayed with it through nine trimesters. Penn State was on a trimester series, but I really wasn't doing real well in it. And I knew that I had a brother coming in so that I couldn't, so I transferred into a sort of nondescript major called mineral economics where I could use all the math and chemistry that I had had in metallurgy. Graduated with a B.S. in mineral economics.
Then did you get a job right out of college?
I got married in September of 1969, and my graduation was supposed to be the day of my marriage. So needless to say, I didn't go to graduation. And I spent the first couple weeks, I got to give my wife credit because she married a guy that had just graduated and didn't have a job. And she at the time was working as a registered nurse. She had graduated a year earlier. And I interviewed several places, but the interview that where I got my first job was with Westinghouse. And I had taken a couple industrial engineering courses and was kind of interested in that, and began my working career as an associate industrial engineer at the Westinghouse plant in East Pittsburgh.
You were there for a while, right?
I worked at East Pittsburgh and became a manufacturing supervisor over a period of years, but from 1969 to 1985. And in 85, the East Pittsburgh plant was in the process of closing down. And by chance, a gentleman that I had gone to high school with was down there. He was a mechanical engineer working at what at that time was called Westinghouse Atomic in Cheswick. And he asked if I was interviewing any place at that particular time, and I said, yeah, I had resumes out to several places. And he asked if I had interviewed at Cheswick. And I said, no, but I said, if you think it would be beneficial, I would. And he said that, yeah, they were looking, and I had had experience in electrical coil manufacturer as a supervisor, some copper fabrication as a supervisor, and they were looking for some people that had some familiarity with that for their quality assurance department. And I began my career as a quality assurance engineer at the Cheswick facility of Westinghouse.
And so you were always at Westinghouse, just different spots?
Well, Westinghouse later became Morrison Knudsen. There was another interim owner of Westinghouse, and then finally Curtis Wright. And Curtis Wright is really where I retired. The Cheswick facility was a little unique because of the work that we did with the U.S. government and the products that we manufactured, and a foreign entity couldn't own that. The U.S. government would not let that happen. Over the course of my career at the Westinghouse Cheswick facility, or Curtis Wright facility, I worked on pumps and motors for nuclear facilities, and I was the lead quality assurance engineer for Westinghouse's commercial nuclear pumps and commercial nuclear pumps at one time. And then I became a principal engineer, and I worked on certain products that we make for the U.S. Navy in addition to the commercial nuclear pumps. And it gave me the opportunity to travel in some instances.
Where'd you travel?
Japan, to China, to Switzerland, to the United Kingdom. And
what was your favorite spot to travel to? Like, which was the most unique?
Well, unique is a tough word.
Which one stood out to you the most?
I enjoyed Japan more for the people than for the activity that I was over there for. In most instances, both the trips to the UK, to Japan, and to China were in association with projects where you had to have that foreign entity participate in order to gain the contract.
When you say you enjoyed the people in Japan, what do you mean by that?
The people of Japan were very welcoming, even though you had the language barrier, yeah. at least from our side. And you have to give them credit. The most foreign nations speak multiple languages.
One of them being English, right?
Yeah, and English typically was the more prevalent of that second language for most of them. Although my first trip to Japan was by myself, and that trip, along with a Japanese to English dictionary, was a different type trip, to say the least. But you learn to pick up some of the phrases in that, and like I said, it was interesting to see a different culture. Yeah. Enjoyed the food, although some of it would be, you would consider somewhat suspect.
Like what?
There were some appetizers that could be considered unappetizing. There was a, I know one that they were forcing me to try. It was a cow brain in a, like a cream sauce.
Oh,
was it good? It was different, to say the least. But by and large, the Japanese, particularly because they're very demanding of fresh food and cleanliness, that was probably one of the areas where I relaxed the most. When I was in the UK, I tried a lot of dishes that you typically wouldn't get, you know, in a restaurant in the United States. And most of the gentlemen that I was with in the UK would do the same thing. You try and expand whatever your culinary preferences might be.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the UK simply because a gentleman that I was always over there to see took us out into the countryside and to some of the estates, particularly for dinner, and I was amazed by the pheasant population over there.
Yeah.
They had some of the biggest, and I mean, it was nothing to go down the road and see 200 or 300 pheasants out in fields.
Jeez.
But it's all privately owned and very strictly regulated.
It was never like that here, eh?
No.
Yeah.
No. You mean as far as having that many?
That number of pheasants,
no,
yeah.
No, not at all.
Do you have any, like, standout stories from traveling outside of the U.S.?
No, not really. I could tell you, I mean, there were things that are so shocking when you're over there. In China, at the time that we went over there,
yeah,
and we were on a pretty hectic schedule, at least the first trip. We were to visit 10 cities in a pretty wide divergence of localities, and you didn't really get a real opportunity to see the culture.
Oh, jeez.
But food and water over there, I would, any stories that you've heard about the water, not to drink,
yeah,
I can substantiate that. You don't want to drink anything but bottled water or...
In Japan or...?
No, in China.
In China.
I made the mistake of brushing my teeth with the hotel tap water and had my stomach, I didn't get really nauseated to the point of throwing up, but for 2 days, and when you're on a pretty hectic schedule and you're trying to sit through meetings, it's not the most pleasant experience to have your stomach rolling around.
That's
and
awesome.
Then the difference in the cultures and the way that they present and what they eat, you had to be a little more suspect in China than you did, obviously, in the UK. And like I said, Japan, I really had no... you learned the different styles of cooking. And we were fortunate, too. We had a very attractive interpreter for two of the trips over to Japan. And we invited her to dinner, and we let her select the places. So what she would do... was take us to out-of-the-way places, so you got to develop some appreciation of Japanese culture.
Yeah.
She took us to one place. It was like the Japanese version of Cheers. When you walked in, there was a salutation that the owner would give. That it was so similar to what you saw in the Cheers series.
Yeah.
But the food was good. The only thing is, in most instances, when you eat traditional Japanese style, you are sitting flat. You're not in chairs. You are on cushions. But if you're unaccustomed to it, your legs go to sleep. That coupled with any Japanese alcoholic beverages can be a pretty wicked conversation. Although I will say, we as a visitor tried to, minimize our consumption, but some of our Japanese counterparts were literally had to be lifted out of the dining area. Jeez. And there are different types of Japanese cooking too, and we got to see that. There's one called shabu shabu, where they have a large pot in the center of the table of boiling water.
Yeah.
And then you have thin sliced meats and thin sliced vegetables, and you take chopsticks and you dip those into that boiling pot. And that boiling pot is pretty large, but that was the way that food was presented. And there were sauces to go along with both the vegetables and the meats. One would have been strongly accented by what they call wasabi, which is a very
spicy
horseradish-like condiment.
Yeah. So with all of your... Did you travel abroad after you had kids?
Like, yes. Traveling was after we had kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long were your trips?
The longest would be, I'd have to say, it was 10 days, 2 weeks.
Oh.
Okay, in country.
Yeah.
Not that long. There were a couple that they wanted us to go over for longer periods of time, but I managed to avoid those.
All right, so we are back in my grandpa's house after taking a nice little drive to see where he grew up in Brackenridge, and let's just hop right back into it. So you had two kids, my mom and my Uncle Bill. Which was the harder one to raise? Who was more difficult?
Difficult is a
who was
a
more
difficult
of,
word.
Who was more of a pain to raise?
I'd have to say Bill, but your girls are tougher to raise. I think from the standpoint of a parent's perspective.
Yeah.
They're also normally more expensive to raise.
Yeah.
But Bill was probably a little more challenging, I think, than your mother was.
And what age did you start taking him hunting and fishing?
Bill actually started hunting or going with the small game hunting when he was 4 years old, if you can believe that. And we hunted grouse at that time.
Isn't it high grass?
Oh, no. It was on the strips up at the Crick Hills of Mahoning and Dayton.
What Mahoning do you mean strips?
I'm trying to think if you were ever up there. I mean, they are real steep, rock-covered, grapevine thickets. No, Bill, and that's when I knew Bill really...
Enjoyed
the outdoors. I mean, there are very few, if any, four-year-olds that would endure some of the treks that we had and the weather that he endured.
Yeah.
There'd be days that his cheeks would be red. The mucus on his nose would be frozen to his lip. But he always liked it. And as he got a little bit older, I let him take a slingshot. And
You ever had anything with it?
Well,
it,
there was a period, there was a day that we hunted locally, ringneck.
Yeah.
And one of the dogs had pointed a ringneck. The bird flushed and I shot and I knew I'd hit it and I saw it go down. And we told Bill to go over and if this bird happens to flush again, you make sure you shoot it.
With the slingshot?
Yeah, yeah. So he gathered, I forget what the berry is called. It's a large yellow berry, either that or it might have been a small rock. We went over and the dog went on point and the bird flushed again.
Yeah.
And I shot, but he shot and we told him that he had killed the bird. And that was one of the ways that you try. I mean, it can get pretty boring for a little kid to walk along.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to do some other things. As he got a little bit older, I'd take a .22 along. And when we'd take a break for lunch, we'd set up targets for him and let him shoot the .22 while we were eating lunch.
Yeah.
But he was always... The one thing that he really used to get frustrated with was archery. He swore he'd never be able to shoot a bow and arrow. And you know now he is he is an exceptionally accurate shot. But it's one of...
Why do you think that?
Huh?
Was he not accurate at first?
Well, he was frustrated because at an early age, I mean, doing everything right as far... At first, you're using a bow that isn't similar to one that you would use hunting. And you're using your fingers as a release, which... And... You're basically using, rather than the arrow rest, your
finger
yeah. as a rest for the arrow. So all the things make it a pretty frustrating thing for a young kid. Mm-hmm. But he certainly progressed, and he's one heck of an archery shot now.
What did my mom like to do when she was younger?
Actually, she did things that typically typical girls would do up until she was about 7. And I tried to encourage her in ball. And actually, she saw the girls in uniform at a custard stand. And she thought the uniforms were kind of neat.
Yeah.
So she asked if I'd teach her to play softball.
How old was she when that happened?
So, she was 7.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, yeah. And we started... practicing. And
you coached her, right?
I coached her through what would be the equivalent of Little League and girls softball at Lower Borough, then through Senior League at Lower Borough.
High school? You coached
no,
high
school? Senior League up to high school. High school.
Okay.
No, she was a good player. She was a good shortstop. But for some reason, after the last year of Senior League, when she went into high school, she developed a horrendous hitch.
Yeah.
I knew of to get it corrected.
I've heard of that before.
She was a strong arm, though. She played shortstop for me. And I'll give her credit. One of the things that I remember from her softball career, we were in a tournament. At that time, Lower Borough was a slow pitch league, and most of the teams that we would see at a tournament were slow pitch.
Yeah.
But... we were playing out in Northmoreland Park.
Yeah.
And I'd been told by one of the parents that this team that we were playing could run, and you better have a catcher. And Jen had never caught before.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Jen, you're going to catch today. And she says, you serious? I said, yeah. I said, no, just relax. I'll show you the stance. And she threw out 2 runners that day.
Really?
And stopped them from trying to steal. She threw 1 out of 3rd and 1 out of 2nd.
Jeez.
And probably one of the better games she played in a tournament. She was always, she was a good slow pitch pitcher. She never got flustered.
What does slow pitch mean?
Slow pitch where you have to have an arc, a 12-foot arc. It's not like fast pitch. Where we'd get killed.
You have to make it be an arc?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you like measure that?
Well, I mean, it depends on where your release point is, and that I mean, if they don't have a
they don't measure it, but like
no,
they can't really determine.
But you know, it couldn't be something that went in like fast pitch.
A straight one, yeah.
And your mom would try and sneak a little more velocity in at times. The arc wouldn't be quite as great. But she had good control, and I'd watch the batters, and then I would tell her what batters to go high, when to go low. Mm-hmm. She was pretty good at that. Now, she was very even-tempered, which was the exact contrast as far as control and control of emotions. I think she internalized most things.
Uncle Bill was short-tempered?
He was a little more volatile. Yeah. He could have been a really good ball player.
He was.
He was a good ball player, but he could have been a good ball player. Yeah. He just never had that. There were too many other things that he wanted to do besides practice.
Like social life.
Yeah. And then, you know, part of it, you know, I can blame myself because he's an avid hunter and fisherman.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're about getting wrapped up here. Throughout your whole life, if you could redo one thing, what would it be and why? Like one major decision.
Decisions, there are several. But I think probably the one thing, I think, like I said, I was an excellent student through elementary school and junior high. Mm-hmm. If I had it to do over again, I think I would have applied myself a little more diligently.
Yeah.
In high school, it would have made college a lot easier, and then that in turn affects other decisions as far as what type of job you took.
Yeah,
I actually think I was actually pursuing something that I really wouldn't have enjoyed initially, that being metallurgy,
mm-hmm.
but I think mechanical engineering, and as my career developed, would have been probably a better choice. And then even the financial markets and that. I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed industrial relations situations that I had incurred as a supervisor in a union facility like the East Pittsburgh Works of Westinghouse.
All right. So we have met time. And I think that's about it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's been great.